Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
And welcome to episode 215 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It is Sunday night. We are at our normal time slot, and joining me as often, the great Scott Coleman is here. Hello, sir.
How's it going, Brad? Thanks for having me on. Hope you're doing well. Hope everybody out there is doing well, and happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there.
Yeah, it is still Mother's Day as we were talking now, later on my end, as always, than it is on Scott's end. But here we are talking about some baseball stuff. And some actual news, I will say. We're hoping, and this, we'll talk about this more as we get going here, we're probably hoping for some more clear news, maybe in the next few days on one of the avenues that we're going to discuss. But first off, there was some legitimate, hard and fast news in the last few days, and that is that the changes to the MLB draft for this year. We have talked about this a little bit already on the pod, but now official, essentially, with the decision going from 40 rounds, which is where it's been for quite some time now, down to 5 rounds. And that is a pretty severe change. I think we've talked about this a few times, but just the logistics of that. Before we go into any other detail, my first reaction to this is, like, even with some, as someone who kind of knew this was coming, it was either going to be 5 or 10, and based upon who you asked, people were leaning towards 5. It's just kind of a crazy thing, and I know you and I are not necessarily the most draft dialed in people, but at the same time, like, it doesn't take a whole lot of draft knowledge to realize the kind of substantial impact that it's going to have on a lot of things, both from the baseball side and the team side, to just a lot of individual, you know, young players that are going to be affected by this.
Yeah, it really sucks for the high school players, college seniors. I mean, you know, it just kind of, like, everything has turned their world upside down, and there's many, many layers to this. I will say, you know, baseball's draft is unlike any other professional sport, right? Basketball is 2 rounds. Football is 7. You know, it's already different to begin with. But as you said, going from 40 rounds to 5 is pretty drastic. So, you know, I think we dig into who this maybe impacts the most. And obviously it seems to bode well for college players who are probably going to get drafted anyway. And teams know. As do most, you know, you go to Baseball America, teams know what high school players are for real. It's those kids who are kind of on the cusp between getting drafted higher and trying to get a good deal, you know, maybe make a little money and go pro and forego college. Those are the ones who are going to suffer, because not only now will they more than likely not get drafted, even if they go the JUCO route and return in another year, in theory, there's a whole other crop of players next year who are going to be draft eligible as well. So it sucks for the players, as, you know, this is the way these things kind of go whenever players' associations get involved. But, you know, I guess you make the most of the 5 rounds and go from there.
You would imagine the 2021 draft will be absolutely loaded because of what you just said, in part, is that, you know, a lot of these high school players, especially, that might have stayed in the draft, or might have been, you know, might have been taken in, like, the 7th round of a normal draft, who probably would have skipped college, are considering, at least from what I hear and read and from people that are smarter than I am on this subject, you know, the, you know, going to the JUCO route might make some sense, because that way, if you go JUCO, you can enter the draft next year. Whereas if you go commit to play at, you know, Vanderbilt or something like that, you're sort of locked in college for multiple seasons. So it could have long range impact, kind of short range impact. One thing I want to say before we dive into, like, some of these specifics is that we've referenced this before on the show, but this is sort of the backlash that was out there. A lot of people in the industry are not very happy about this, I will say. Ken Rosenthal described the reduction of the draft as, quote, a warning shot, end quote. And he also said it's, quote, a clear statement from owners that believe their financial position is bleaker than the union and fans think. But the warning shot thing is interesting to me. and passing people that we trust have talked about, you know, just kind of the uneasy nature of this whole thing, and people that, you know, cover the draft, like, of course, they're gonna have to go ahead and do that now for the next month. But because, by the way, the further confirmed date that's not been announced yet, but it's gonna happen, is June 10th, which is exactly 1 month from today. That's a pretty short timetable, all things considered, to now. I'm not sure how much teams are gonna have to adjust their strategies, but they're certainly gonna have to do some adjustment of strategy when it comes to the draft. And 1 month in COVID-19 timeline might seem like a long time, because it, you know, everything seems like a long time right now. That's not a lot of time for people that are trying to figure out what they're going to be doing, and franchises that are going to be making decisions. But granted, I mean, I think my first and broadest takeaway, other than just the impact of so many few players, is that it feels like the Players Association, and this is the feeling that I think has been out there now for a while, kind of just gave this away. And it happens a lot in all of these negotiations. You know, it happens in the NFL when the draft, you know, the draft comes around. The NBA famously, like, you know, Players Association doesn't necessarily want to take care of the players that are not already in the association. But this is a situation where you would hope the Players Association is kind of giving this away to get something else. But this is definitely a win for the owners, because the owners are saving money in the present. And it's just kind of set up for teams to be favorable in terms of, you know, fiscal responsibility, however you want to say that. They're going to save a lot of money here, and the players that get, it's the players that get affected, but it's players that are not already in baseball.
Well, and we've talked, and I think anybody who follows the game knows that there's just kind of been this avalanche over time, building and building between the players and the owners, and salaries and contracts and service time, and I think it's just yet another thing that, you know, kind of piles onto the top of it. As you said, you know, the high school seniors and college players, they don't get a seat at the table whenever these things are going on, right? So, as you said, they're going to get pushed to the side. Who knows if whenever the it comes time to try to work out a new contract, if we feel the effects from this or not. I will say that, you know, for being a sport that relies so much on the draft, and I think more so than all pro franchises, of course, rely on the draft, but it's 40 rounds, and there's such a, and I think in Jeff Passan's article for ESPN, teams really use the draft, especially teams that don't have unlimited pockets, as a way to find that surplus value, because you get 6 or 7 years of these guys at minimal cost. Again, it's a lot of it is shot in the dark. This is as unpredictable as a draft as there is. But I think this really does hurt, especially the teams that don't have the deep pockets. This will hurt them far more than the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Red Sox of the world.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's certainly the case. You know, in theory, it also hurts teams that are good at developing players, which is not what you want. If you're baseball, I think you want to reward teams that are good at developing players. Mm-hmm. And this is not what this does. I mean, even if they went to 10, and I think when we had Eric on, Eric said this too, like, you know, going from 10 is a drastic reduction from 40, but 10 is, you know, quite literally double the amount of rounds the 5 is. I mean, going down to 5, even from the, you know, 10 was once the threshold that we were discussing. That's a big change, and it's a lot of money that they're saving. I get all that, and the times are sort of dictating everything right now, but I don't know. It's brutal for a lot of teams. I think about when you say teams that don't have deep pockets, I always think of like the Rays, for instance, mm-hmm. who, you know, basically make their living on developing players, having them sort of arrive early, and then usually trading a lot of them to sort of restock. Sure. And staying young and staying cheap, and that's unfortunate because the market is kind of brutal and all that stuff. But, you know, not the most fun way to operate as a fan base. But at the same time, it's been effective for them, at least to some degree. The Rays are often good, and you know, it sucks for these teams that really need to take advantage of the draft to have these homegrown talent. I mean, the Braves have done a good job in the draft at, you know, hit and miss at times, but, you know, this is still a team that's had some big time successes with their own draft picks in the past. So, I don't know. I mean, here's one thing we should discuss. Undrafted players, which is a much larger pool this time around, can only sign for up to $20,000. And now that's a decent chunk of change. I get all that. But a guy that's going to get drafted in the 6th round, usually, signing for $20,000 as a maximum amount, is interesting. And that could have a number of sort of fallout things as well. versus, you know, a lot of these guys are definitely going to choose to college because, you know, we'll talk about this in a second with the roster stuff, but minor league baseball may not be happening. So if you don't think, you know, I don't know, it's such a give and take that players that don't think they have a pretty clear path may not want to take $20,000 and may want to go to college, even if it's JUCO, because they may not have anywhere to play this season as well. Like, there's so many give and take things here to talk about, but that's one that struck me was $20,000 is a decent amount of money, but for someone who would normally be a sixth round pick, that's not a lot of money.
Yeah, right. I mean, I have a friend who was drafted in the 26th round by the Pittsburgh Pirates years and years ago, and he signed for like $25,000, and within a year he had blown through it, right? You buy a car and you're out, or, I mean, just living expenses. And I think you talked about the minor leagues and the future and it really being even more bleak than what we're looking at the big league level. You know, so many of these players use their signing bonuses to live off of, because when you're making $10,000 or $15,000, $20,000 a year in the minors, you know, that's below the minimum wage, right? If you extrapolate it out over to 52 weeks. So, $20,000, I'm guessing some of the college seniors, I guess, will give them a way to join the big leagues, and I guess it's better than nothing, but really, you know, 20K, pre-tax, right? You take a chunk out of that too. You know, you can't even buy a car for that. So it sucks. I mean, all the way around, I don't think anyone, by any means is happy with this other than maybe the owners. But again, it's kind of the hand we're dealt.
Even if you really hated college, which I think is a, something that people, like, I would say under-discuss when it comes to guys who are either in college or may go to college, that, you know, for instance, in the NBA, you know, there's this discussion every year about how many guys leave early for the NBA. And it's like, well, if he's not going to get drafted, why is he going to leave? And it's like, sometimes the answer is I don't want to go to college anymore. And it's kind of a cut and dry thing that people just overlook. As someone who didn't particularly enjoy college, I could sort of understand that. I mean, I wanted to get out as fast as I could, frankly. But now you have this decision where if you're a high school senior that almost certainly would have not gone to college and signed for whatever you could sign for as a 12th round pick, now if all you can get is $20,000, yeah, you still might hate college and may not want to go. Mm-hmm. But it almost might behoove you, even if it's JUCO, it might behoove you to go to a JUCO for a year.
Yeah, sure.
And just do it again. So there's always different incentives. Like, I would imagine those guys that don't want to go to college and never did don't want to go to, you know, Texas and get locked in for multiple years. But if you can go to some JUCO that's like a baseball factory, which those places do exist.
Oh, sure.
And just bide your time for a year. Yeah. That might be an option. So, like, the more I think about it, I feel like that's going to be very frequently discussed. That's not my idea anyway, but I just feel like that makes a lot of sense. I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if that's the alternative, either you settle for 20K or go to junior college for a year. And like you said, it's not the beginning of your college career towards a doctorate degree, right? You're going to take math 101 and English 101. And as long as you don't fail, I don't have the JUCO eligibility restrictions here in front of me, but I would imagine you don't have to have a 4.0 GPA in order to play. Yeah, as you said, it's just kind of a way, it's a bridge. I think that's why the JUCO, you know, for the Carter Stewarts of the world, who of course was drafted a couple years ago, found the elbow problems. He goes to a JUCO. Of course, he opted to go play in, I think, Japan somewhere. But for those players who do kind of fall through the cracks, or maybe don't want to do 3 years of college, but do, you know, aren't necessarily ready for the big leagues or don't feel like they got paid well enough, the JUCO is there as kind of a lifeline. And I hope a lot of players do that and just kind of suck it up and do, right? Like they've been in school for 12 years now. What's another year, right? And hopefully can build up their stock and their resume a little bit more, and then get the payday they deserve, hopefully in another year's time.
Yeah, that makes total sense. As for the financials of this, obviously this is the whole point of this, the whole reason behind this, in addition to minor league baseball probably not happening. So just, you know, logistical things with rosters, is saving money. Jeff Passan reported, I'm going to read this to you now. The agreement allows teams to delay signing bonuses with a maximum of $100,000 to be paid within 30 days of a player signing, with half the remainder due on July 1st, 2021, and the rest due July 1st, 2022. So even with all of this, guys that are going to actually get signing bonuses, it appears from the reporting from ESPN, are not going to get those up front. And maybe that's actually good in some ways for some of these guys, so that it might help them be responsible. But at the same time, you know, it's not great to have your money just sitting somewhere that you can't touch and not making interest and not doing those things. So even after everything else that we've already talked about, with clearly, you know, ownership getting to save money and line their own pockets here a little bit, there's another thing on top of this where the guys who get picked in the first round don't get all their money right away.
Right. Well, and if you are, you know, you're a top pick, these guys know if they're going to get drafted. If you're Spencer Torkelson up the road at ASU, who's supposed to be the top pick in the draft or one of those top picks, he was expecting to get a check for $5-6 million here, yep, the next couple of weeks. And that's not going to happen now. I don't know his or any of the other guys' financial situations, but you're right. It's going to be a delay in getting their money. Maybe it is for the best and it'll help them save it a little better. But again, it's just another thing. And we've said this a couple times, it sucks. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat it. It sucks for these guys. Hopefully they're able to just kind of take this little speed bump in stride and have long big league careers and make their money back tenfold. But yeah, it sucks all the way around.
None of this is good news in general. And by the way, since this is a Braves-specific podcast, the Braves, for the first time in a while, I feel like, don't have a high pick, like a super high pick. They picked 25th in the first round. And then, by the way, after that, they don't pick on 97, I believe, after looking this up. So if you're looking for a small bright spot, it's that the Braves are not going to be as dialed into this draft as they have been in recent past. Still, it would be good for the Braves to have more flexibility and all that stuff. But we will dive more into the draft. I promise you, as we both referenced, this is not the specialty of either of us. Eric is definitely much more in that world, in addition to Matt Powers and others. I might bribe former co-host of mine, Carlos Collazo, a legitimate MLB draft expert, to come on the podcast in the near future. I have to actually talk to him about that, which means I probably shouldn't announce it. But alas, now I've pressured him in public, and he might come on. I have Carlos's number still, so I can bother him. But we will do plenty of draft coverage. As I said before, you know, it's 1 month from now. So on the bright side, Scott, we have some content, like, legitimate for the site. I was trying to talk to Chris Willis the other day about this. I guess it was yesterday. Like, hey, man, if nothing else, we can now just do the draft for a month. And that's not the worst thing in the world. Like, I'm not a big draft guy, but I can promise you I'll probably be more dialed into the first couple rounds of this draft than any other draft I've ever been dialed into.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's such a weird timing. I mean, you know, it's right in the middle of the season. It's when teams are starting to make their push, start thinking about the trade deadline. And then, oh, yeah, by the way, like, it'd be like throwing the NFL draft in the middle of week 7 and 8. I mean, nobody would expect that.
That's
to happen,
always
right?
Weird. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about the baseball draft that people just overlook when they talk about why it's not as big of a deal. Part of it is just the logistics of guys being further away from the majors and making an impact. That's definitely a huge part of it. But part of it is also, like, when it is. It's in the middle of the season, and why?
If the Braves are playing the Nationals that night and it's the same night as the draft, I'm gonna watch the game. I'm not gonna sit there and watch who the Colorado Rockies pick with the 65th overall, you know, right? I don't know. I've never understood it. Only baseball. Baseball's always been the kind of the black sheep with everything, but
I guess it's, you know, it comes right off that, and the other crazy thing is you have guys getting picked that are still playing college. They play like the next day, like play that night or play the next day. And that's not happening this year, obviously, because there's nothing happening. But that's the other factor that is always really interesting with this stuff. It's like, oh, by the way, he'll be playing tomorrow for LSU. And it's like, wait, what?
Tune in and see your first round pick, throw 130 pitches and pray that his elbow doesn't fall off. Yeah,
exactly. Scott, any final thoughts on the draft before we move on to other things?
No, I think we covered it. Hopefully they said it's something to talk about. It's some real sports stuff. I think people really dug into the NFL draft a couple weeks ago because it was real life sports happening. And I hope that baseball's draft gets some hype and some publicity, and we'll certainly talk about it. And as you said, we'll have others on who really know their craft.
Actual experts coming, I promise. All right. After a quick break here, we'll come back and talk about the other big news, which is more, I would say, Major League Baseball related. So hold on tight.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? for sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out. Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It was always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
All right, Scott, the other stuff from the weekend, a lot of this is from Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic on Saturday, but there's some Jeff Passan mixed in as well. We are getting closer to at least more negotiations on the two sides of baseball and the Players Association, as we sort of referenced earlier. Rosenthal reported on Saturday that baseball is discussing a plan with ownership, so, you know, the 30 stakeholders, basically, on a call on Monday. That's the plan. And if that gets approved, it's going to be presented to the Players Association on Tuesday. It requires a lot of approvals, but we have sort of a rough outline of how it's going to look and work if the reporting is true. And it could certainly change, because once it gets to the players, I'm sure it'll sort of get batted around a little bit. But basically, it calls for, and we'll kind of go through all this stuff, but in terms of the timeline, roughly 80-game season, essentially, beginning early July. Jeff Passan reported that spring training could begin as soon as mid-June, but it's all flexible there. That's about a month from now, as we referenced before. Also, Passan reported that, quote, at least a dozen teams, end quote, have suggested that players should be ramping up at this point in time, which is very noteworthy. We'll sort of stop there for right now. What do you make of all of this? I know we've been talking about plans, I feel like, for a month, but it seems to be getting closer and closer to maybe not reality in terms of it actually happening, but they're certainly getting closer in terms of the discussion. It's becoming more concrete. And now that we have a timeline, like, hey, Monday there's going to be a call, and then Tuesday they're going to talk to the Players Association. They're definitely heating up a little bit.
For sure. And I think, you know, as we've done these podcasts over the last few months, at first it was, well, maybe the beginning of May, and then it was Memorial Day, which is a couple of weeks away, and then it was maybe early June, and now they're looking around July 1st, 4th of July. So you're right. I mean, I think that the fact that teams have been telling players to get ready at least kind of leads you to believe that front offices think this is possible. I would love to be a fly on the wall in that Zoom or conference call or whatever they're doing tomorrow with all the owners to get where they're at with this, because they're the ones who, you know, I have a little bit of trouble feeling too bad for these billionaire owners who have just made incredible amounts of money off their teams over the last however long they've owned them. But they are the ones who are on the short end of the stick here, you know, seeing almost $0 come in right now. So I think it's going to be fascinating. I can't wait to see what exactly owners think about, and I'm sure we'll hear from Passan and Rosenthal about what happened on that call. Of course, the MLBPA is going to be, I think, the biggest hurdle to get over. There was a report earlier on Sunday that players have kind of balked at the publicly circulated story, if you will, that owners are going to ask players to take another pay cut, yeah, assuming the games start. I don't blame them. I think that, again, it's just kind of building up to these two sides are not going to see eye to eye on a lot of things. And it's really just going to come down to what side is willing to make the biggest concession, if any, because I think it's ultimately possible that, you know, owners don't want to lose a ton of money here, and I get it. Players don't want to play for free, and I get it, and put their health at risk. A lot of hurdles. Hopefully this week we get a little more clarity.
Yeah, there was some reporting that salaries are a, quote, source of fiction. Friction. And that makes sense. I mean, The Player Association might even demand, this is one of the reports, that might even demand like further proof in terms of like looking at the books on ownership, and if they're, because ownership's, I guess, balking and saying that, you know, it may not be feasible to play without fans, which is something that I've been talking about for more than a month now on this podcast. Like, I'm not trying to defend ownership here, but I promise you they're going to bring up the fact that, you know, I saw a report today. It was about, you know, I think it was like 40%, 50% of all revenue is, you know, basically based on fans and attendance and game day stuff. It's a lot of money. Yeah, it's just interesting. And we're going to sort of see this standoff. And honestly, it's like drawing up a new CBA, which normally takes a long, long time. And they're going to have to do it in like 2 weeks or some outrageous number. I mean, it's just really interesting to see. We're going to hear lots of different things. I don't have a whole lot of faith in the Players Association, I'll be honest with you. Baseball used to be really, really awesome in the Players Association, to the point where they actually, where fans hated it. Like the 94 strike is the most famous example of this, where like Donald Fair was the most hated man in America, basically, in 1994, because they struck. But it used to be a really, really strong Players Association that could kind of draw the line of sand, and they're really willing to do that. In recent years, and I'm not a labor expert, but I can tell you that the Tony Clark regime is not exactly known for doing the best job necessarily right now in the Players Association. Again, I'm not an expert, but that's kind of, I've read enough, and people that do know these things do not have a whole lot of faith in the Players Association, which, if you want, if you're just a fan that wants to see baseball, maybe that's good for you in some way, because you just want baseball to happen. But yeah, a standoff could be coming, to be sure. And you know, I guess the potential for baseball increases if one side's willing to roll over, and it's usually the players that roll over, because players need money more than owners do. That's usually how it works.
And I get it too. I mean, there's a lot of concessions that are going to have to be made on both sides. And I totally get that if owners and the league wants the players to play 80 plus games and start traveling all over, at least their region of the country, and, you know, live out of hotels. And I mean, I get it, right? I get why there would be frustration on all sides. So I think as fans, we just kind of have to hope that cooler heads prevail, because it sounds like these things could get kind of heated, as you've said. The MLBPA in recent years has taken some heat for being kind of ridiculous with stuff. I don't know. I guess we'll see how the next 2 days go.
Yeah, we will. I mean, the salary reduction thing, you know, they came to this agreement really fast in March, and they needed to go really fast in March to agree to some sort of structure, even though there's not really a full-blown structure, but they had to do something to sort of guarantee the players some money. At the same time, that deal is now being seen differently by both sides, which is very predictable in a lot of ways. But it seems two things seem extremely likely here. The owners are going to ask, or maybe demand, but at least ask for more reductions from players if they play with no fans. Because, and by the way, they're going to play with no fans. They're not playing with fans. So at least at the beginning, I guess if you want to cross your fingers and hope that by the end of the season, maybe they get to fans, I don't think that's going to happen, but that's at least plausible to me. Yeah. If they start this thing, there will not be fans. There will not be fans. That's a lock. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, for sure.
So regardless, if they ask them to do that, and they probably are going to by all indications here, I'll also predict / expect players to say no originally, which means you're now at an impasse. And it's like whoever blinks first, and where do you compromise? And following the machinations of that will be very interesting. Because players don't, you know, they're going to want to be paid appropriately. And it's, it gets into this spot where I can already see a lot of fans saying, you know, why can't you just agree? Because it's millions of dollars for whoever. But honestly, it's not always that much money. Think about the guy making the minimum. It's a lot of money.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
To be sure. But if the guy making the minimum is making a prorated number minus taxes, and you're asking him to maybe put himself in some danger, maybe not a whole lot if it's contained well, but there will be guys that they're still making more money than I am. I totally get that. But if you're just on the, if you're on the roster and you're like, and we'll talk about the rosters in a second, but if you're like the AAA, like the quadruple A guy, that's like there for depth, you're not making a whole lot of money, man. You're just not. So it's not, I would recommend people not think about Mike Trout and not think about the guys making like $40 million a year, and think about the guy who's player number 29 on a roster that is in AAA for most of the season, but sure. In this scenario will be up, but making very little money, et cetera.
Yeah, you're Chad Sobotkas of the world. Yeah, yep. I mean, as we've said, the financial mindset of a Freddie Freeman is a lot different than that of a Chad Sobotka, naturally. So, you know, it is interesting because they've already gotten this year of service time kind of guaranteed and locked in with everything going in. I think that gives the players a little more ground to stand on than maybe they normally would, because that was clearly what they wanted most was to progress their service time another year for obvious reasons. So I don't know, man. I think I would like to think that baseball can kind of be the thing that America comes around, and there's sports, you know, we have games on TV here in 2 months, but I don't know. You read these articles from Rosenthal and Passan, and Joel Sherman had a good write-up on it as well, I think with the New York Post, that you just kind of get the sense things are going to get ugly. And as you said, it takes years to work out new CBAs, and they're really kind of doing this on the fly. So hopefully everything works, but there is a lot of things to get through here.
Right, and it's also important to remember that one of the reasons that players usually lose these negotiations is that, as we sort of discussed in a roundabout way, players have to agree on something that makes sense for people on one hand and not on the other. Like, that's always the great divide inside player associations, is like what's good for the top 5% is usually not good for everybody else, et cetera. Yeah, sure. It's kind of you're trying to herd your players onto one voting side, and guys making $500K versus Mike Trout have different interests. So it's just really hard to talk about things you have to talk about the players as a block, but you have to remember that each guy or each sets of guys have their own interest to think about when voting and talking about stuff. You want to talk about the rest of the sort of baseball stuff from the reporting? It's more fun, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. More fun to think about. Yeah.
One of the main ideas is a 78-game schedule, which is definitely on the lower end of what I thought they might do. But it's essentially set up to be 12 games against each of your divisional opponents, and then 6 games against each team in the same geographic division of the opposite league. So basically, the Braves would be in the NL East still, which is different than some of the other proposals that are out there, but they would only play against the NL East and the AL East, which would be tough for the Braves, because obviously there are a lot of good teams in both those divisions. You do have the Orioles and the Marlins, which helps. But the other teams, you know, you still have to play the Yankees and the Red Sox and everybody else in the NL East, you know, the Rays, etc. That's kind of the setup that was reported out there. I kind of go all over the place on this. I think it'd be fun. I think it would kind of put you back in this. I remember, at least somewhat, I would remember when I was very young, how it felt to never play the American League as a Braves fan. Like, you never saw the Yankees unless it was the World Series, pre-interleague play. And that would kind of bring it back a little bit here to where you would only be playing, if you're the Braves, you'd only be playing against, you know, a third of the league the whole season, which is kind of strange and also kind of fun. But what do you make of that setup?
Well, I think it's clear if we are going to have any kind of a season, this is kind of what they're going to have to do. I don't think, you know, this. If the regular season was going on, I think next week the Braves are supposed to be in Seattle, and I just don't think that there's any feasible way to have teams flying all the way across the country. But no, I think it'd be fun. Again, this is not permanent. This is to maybe have baseball for a season. I mean, it would be cool to see. You know, Toronto Blue Jays, who have some good young players on their rosters. I think most baseball fans are fans of the Tampa Bay Rays, because they have, you know, a tenth of the payroll that the Yankees and Red Sox do. And every year they're seemingly right there with them, you know, get to see those young guys. Of course, then you get to keep, you alluded to the original proposal, or I think, you know, you kind of get the sense reading these articles that about 8 million things are being thrown out there. I think it was Passan maybe who mentioned, the Braves joining the Central because it was a little more closer geographically.
Keep that in mind, by the way. All of this stuff is tentative, and we've already seen so many different machinations discussed in different things that I wouldn't be wed to anything in particular at the moment. It's all going to change.
Right. I mean, if they said that teams were going to play, they worked out a setup where they're only going to play the 6 teams most close to them geographically. I mean, I think everything is on the table at this point. All right. So, yeah, would it be cool to go, you know, see six games against the Baltimore Orioles? Sure. You mentioned the East is probably the toughest two divisions in baseball. We know how good the Nats, Phillies, and Mets are, at least pretty good. And then, of course, the East, even if you feel like the Red Sox are going to be down a bit after trading Mookie and Chris Sale underwent surgery, you know, you still have maybe the best roster in baseball with the Yankees. They have the Rays. Mentioned the Blue Jays, they're a young, improved team. So, again, this is but as I say this, if it means the Braves are going to have 3 months' worth of baseball and some semblance of normalcy in sports for the first time, and at that point, 4 or 5 months, I would sign up for it 11 times out of 10. So I think it would certainly be different. Nobody really expected this to happen months ago, but if this is the plan they land on, then so be it. I think everybody will be happy if there's some real baseball happening.
Yeah, that's a good synopsis. I mean, and we discussed this previously as well, but part of the issue with the divisional thing, I guess the point is to limit travel, but in the NL and AL East, you're not limiting travel. Like, think about where teams have to go. Like, New York to Miami?
Yeah, Toronto to Miami? Yeah.
Right. I mean, you got to be kidding me. I understand the reason behind it, but in the East specifically, it just doesn't matter a whole lot. Like, I saw people got really mad online this week. There was a Terry McGurk thing that we almost brought up on the podcast, but he started talking about how he was like kind of defiant with Mark Bradley about how they wouldn't be playing anywhere but the NL East. And it's like, hey, Terry, you know what doesn't matter right now? That. Like, what are we doing? And people rightly pointed out, as we have before on this podcast, that like the Braves have just as much in common geographically with the Central as they do with the East. Like, it's not. Yeah. I get it if you were a Mets fan and they told you had to play in the Central or the West. Like, okay, I guess that might bother you a little bit. But if the Braves are like the last possible team to be defined about geography in baseball. They were once in the West, and now they're in a division where no one's near them. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and if you know, originally they were swapping with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Yeah, I mean, you could totally put the Pittsburgh Pirates in the East, put the Braves in the Central for every year, you know, moving forward after this, and it really wouldn't be all that different. I mean, how far east of Atlanta, of St. Louis is Atlanta? I don't know, a couple hundred miles? I mean, it's
somebody
not
did
like
the math. I mean, somebody did the math, and it was literally the Braves are, it's marginal, but the Braves are actually, the average distance to the NL Central is closer for the Braves than it is to the East.
Well, right, if you now look at them, if you look at a map, it makes more sense geographically to join the AL and AL Central and East teams as it does the NL East and Central teams. That makes more sense travel wise than pairing up by, you know, East, Central, and West. So I don't know. We'll see what they end up.
It doesn't really matter. I just kind of remembered that as we were talking, that I almost put that on the outline to talk about. But it was kind of just silly, and people were mad about it. But alas, here we are. One other thing that I wanted to point out that was reported from Rosenthal was that there was discussion about player rosters being 40 to 50 players. Now, granted, that would dip down to about 30 or so per game on the active roster. But I sort of get it in that they want to have deep rosters. They're definitely going to have deeper rosters, it appears. That's kind of all the discussions include that because of various things like, you know, injuries, you know, all that stuff, slow ramp up. I mean, sorry, fast ramp up, not having a whole lot of time. They want to have these increased rosters, but that is really interesting. The size of the roster. And also there was at least one or two reports that I saw today about the proposal for universal DH for this season. And it might be one season only, but I don't want to go too deep into that because that's like one of those topics that people are like forever dug in on and get really mad about. But yeah, for this season alone, you could say, even if you hate the DH, and I'm not a huge DH guy, I think I could sort of see it more this time around because do you ever want pitchers running around? But, you know, the injury stuff is real enough where if you wanted to convince me that universal DH for this season only wouldn't make me upset.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the DH makes sense. And as you said, I think the most simple solution here is just to let teams have their 40-man rosters active for any game. I mean, and then pick or, you know, be able to call on anybody on your 40-man roster and then add them to an active, you know, 30, 32-man roster every night. It makes sense. Teams, I would imagine, are going to be more, if there's a season, they're going to be more cautious than ever with their relievers because they've just all kind of been thrown off their rhythm here. You know, really, it's really no different than if than what like Dallas Keuchel went through last year. You know, he talked about it took him a good month or so into the once he started pitching, which was late June. You know, it was really a full month, he said, before he kind of felt like he was in his groove. I'm guessing a lot of players, if they do start on, say, July 1, are going to be in a similar boat. You know, it's just nothing they've ever done before. And I think having the extra players to keep people fresh, hopefully negate and limit injuries as much as you realistically can. Because naturally, whenever you've done something one way for a decade, and then all of a sudden you ramp up in February and March, and then you slow way down, and maybe guys are still throwing bullpens on the side. But again, it's just all so unconventional. But I would sure think that, as we've talked, having your 40-man roster, as it is now, I mean, teams can obviously pluck their 40-man roster however they so choose, but having expanded active rosters for the games make all the sense in the world.
Yeah, and I'm pretty convinced that if they have a season, it's going to feature larger active rosters than there have been previously. How much larger is kind of where you start getting into interesting conversations, but it'll be larger, and we'll see where that ends up landing. The other, and I think the last thing probably that I wanted to make sure we talk about is that they've seemed to move away from the sort of bubble structure. At least in baseball, there's been a lot of talks about playing in home parks as much as possible, even without fans. I'm not really sure why. I get it to some extent, but I guess they're hoping for fans later on or something like that. But and that will so at least according to the reporting, that'll be driven by like states and how state setups are done, like shelter in place restrictions, etc. And the clubs that can't open in their home parks, I guess, would move to, at least temporarily, to spring training sites or maybe even other parks that are not currently housing baseball teams. I'm not really sure how that all works, but I thought it was interesting that we've definitely heard a lot less talk about, you know, the Arizona plan or certain, you know, Walt Disney World, all that stuff. It's not really happening anymore. It's more like, all right, we're going to go back to our home ballparks and we'll figure it out if certain teams can't play in their home ballparks.
And I think that has to be, and with reason, that as soon as guys like Mike Trout and Clayton Kershaw, who never speak out about anything, kind of raise the red flag at being away from their families for months at a time and their kids and all that, my guess is that was kind of a way, or is a way, for the, as talks progress, of, hey, you know, we're going to do this, but you'll be able to be home. You won't be stuck in a, you know, Scottsdale or some Florida hotel for months on end. That would be my guess. I don't know, but I would imagine most players, if given the opportunity with all this going on, would much rather play. I don't know. Maybe teams feel like they can control the elements a little better in their home parks, or if they figure it's their own employees for cleaning and maintenance and all that, maybe they feel a little better about their chances. I'm sure their facilities are nicer than what they have at the spring park. So
that's an important one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's easier to get medical attention if it's your team doctors in town versus elsewhere. So I'm sure it's just one of those things, is as they've progressed in these, you know, however often they're making these phone calls with everybody, my guess is that was one of the first things where the player said, you can absolutely forget it. Cause it did seem like as soon as the Arizona only and Arizona Florida proposals came out, I don't think I saw a single player saying, you know, hell yeah, let's get this going. But there were the Mike Trouts and Clayton Kershaws of the world who said, you know, absolutely not. I'm not playing if I have to be away from my kids for 4 months.
Yeah, it is a lot harder to sell. I think we said this at the time, but it's a lot harder to sell the bubble concept for a full season, like, than it is for maybe in the NBA, where you're trying to like do a month and a half of a playoffs, and it's not the whole league. It's only certain teams. That's already a tough sell. But then you're trying to tell me that the entire league starts a season fresh in a bubble. It's harder. I will be the first person to grant that.
Yeah.
So it looks like that is out the window at this point, although I won't be surprised by anything. I keep saying that. I think all of this stuff is flexible beyond flexible. Even the best reporters like Rosenthal and Passan, who have all the latest, they'll all couch everything because they just know that it could change. It's just, that's where we are. I mean, that's not satisfying, but I don't know is the right answer.
Well, for sure. I mean, you know, players hate spring training because they don't like being away for 6+ weeks. You can imagine saying, hey, by the way, you're going to do this at a reduced salary for 4 months while the whole world is more effectively shut down. So, yeah, I don't know. Hopefully, I don't know. I would like to think that baseball is going to happen this year, man. I don't know. Maybe it will be surprised and it will, but
I'll be honest. I don't know if it's the timing of when we're doing this and the stuff that was out there on Saturday and Sunday from Passan and Rosenthal. I think I'm actually a little more optimistic about baseball happening right now than I have been at any point in the last month plus.
See, I'm almost the other way. Like a month ago, I would have said, yeah.
And I won't argue.
Yeah. Right. And
that kind of speaks to how crazy this whole thing is, because I can feel that way. You can feel that way. We both have real reasons for it. So I don't know. I think I'm not an expert. Neither are you on this. We're all kind of just going on what we can go on. And I think that's actually really interesting and telling that we have completely different reactions.
Yeah. Like if you told me a month ago that they weren't going to have a season, I would have said, oh man, really? I figured they would have had something. But if you told me it today, I would have said, well, that kind of makes sense. I'm not sure the players and owners are ever going to agree on something.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean,
but you feel the exact same or the exact opposite. I'm sure a lot of people do too. And I'm sure a month ago people might've felt the way I did. So,
I will say this. If we get into, so for instance, we covered this before, but the Monday ownership call, Tuesday league presents, it's May 10th right now. If they're not like close to a deal by June 1, then I will revert back to not having any optimism whatsoever, because they're not setting drop dead dates, but it does feel like mid June in terms of having a concrete plan and like starting spring training. It's kind of a drop dead date in some respects.
Yeah,
because they're not going to say that, but it feels like it.
Well, and I mean, they have to get ready, and if they don't have games going by 4th of July, I just don't see. I mean, maybe like July 10th.
I was going to say maybe mid July, but I'm with you in that general range. If it's anything after that, if they're not playing games or at least have games scheduled, then I'm going to say it's not happening.
Right, and if they think they can realistically get 60 or 70 games, I mean, what's the point, right? Like, are they going to play for 2 months and then have half the league in the playoffs? I don't know.
Well, by the way, Scott, I mean, you say that. If that's my only option, this is just baseball fan / baseball, you know, person that covers baseball, I'll take it. I don't love that, but I think there is still a large portion of the baseball watching population that would sign up for that. It would be very weird, and I think they don't necessarily want to do it, and it's what it comes down to. But if you told me that, like, I either have zero baseball until 2021, or I can have some weird hybrid, I'll still take the weird hybrid. It won't be.
Oh, absolutely.
Normal,
yeah.
But
if you told me I was going to get 3 weeks of games, I would take it. I just think from a player's and owner perspective, I think that I'm with you. I think by June 1, which is another, three or so weeks from now, if they can have something tentatively hammered out. And again, just because they work out a deal does not mean they're locked into anything. I tweeted this the other day. You know, they can kind of pull the plug at any point. If they come to this tentative agreement and say, let's at least try and try to play 81 games or 78 games or whatever they want to do, and all of a sudden it's just a logistical nightmare. Players are having trouble traveling. People are starting to get sick or there's a spy. Who knows what's going to happen? Baseball can't say, look, we tried. We did our best. We just can't realistically do this. You know, stay healthy and we'll see you in 2021.
Yeah, we'll see you in March. I mean, that's in play. I know this is, I think, a third episode in a row that's like kind of just like on these plan updates. And I feel bad for that, but I can assure our listeners, if there is an agreement and we have a start date for baseball, we will start talking about baseball again. And by that, I mean the Braves and like rotations and lineups and all kinds of like, we're going to do that again if we think there's baseball happening or if there's a schedule in place. Until then, try to keep everybody updated. We will definitely do some more Braves-centric content as we get closer. Hopefully that's going to happen. If they cancel and never play, then we will have to figure out what we're going to do.
We're going to go to some dark places on this podcast. All right, we'll suggest our favorite recipes. That might just happen.
We'll be scraping the barrel, but hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully there'll be baseball at some point. That's going to do it for all of my thoughts on this Sunday evening. Scott, do you have final thoughts before we sign off?
No, I'm good. Go enjoy your MJ doc. I'm a couple episodes behind, but it's been awesome. I've been
your
looking forward.
Your noted passion for the NBA just burns through you. I know you're a huge NBA guy, so.
I am. I was, 15 years ago, I was a little bit of a bigger fan, but anyway,
That's how a lot of people are, actually.
Yeah. Alas. But it is good. If people haven't caught that, it is well worth your time. If you're any kind of a sports fan, it's really well done. And anyway, yeah, enjoy the rest of your Sunday night, and hope everybody out there is doing well.
Yep. Happy Mother's Day, everybody, as we said before. And please subscribe to the podcast. We are still trying to bring you some content. Hopefully everybody's appreciating our efforts on that front. But yeah, subscribe, tell a friend. We'll see you next week.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.